I'm gone from the county, from another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
What?
Come on, get that set.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice, that's what you find, just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning and welcome to Crossroads. We come to you every Tuesday at the same time here on WPFW 89.3 FM. WPFW is heard around the world. We want to thank the technologists or whoever made this possible. But right now, we get calls from every part of the world. So thank you for tuning in and giving us your information on what's happening to those impacted by the criminal justice system. Before we start, we open up with what we call the grapevine. Information that you can use. The grapevine. As of mid-November 2025, there have been 43 executions carried out in the United States. This number is a significant increase from the 25 executions that took place in all of 2024, and it is the highest total since 2010. The executions have occurred in 11 states so far this year, with Florida carrying out the most. A New Orleans man who had his murder conviction tossed wins the election as the city's chief record keeper. After spending 3 decades in prison before his murder conviction was vacated, he won election Saturday to serve as the city's chief criminal court record keeper, despite the state challenging his past. The city's newly elected clerk of criminal court, Calvin Duncan, fought for decades to clear his name after being convicted of carrying out a 1981 fatal shooting. Duncan, a Democrat, later uncovered evidence that the police officers lied in court and had his conviction tossed by a judge at 21. Duncan won with 68% of the vote, according to official returns. Returning citizens are being elected all across the country as as clerks of the court, county executives, states representatives, and you name it. So keep the march up. We're making progress.
Yeah.
The number of new detention and prison facilities planned for the near future is not a single concrete number, but rather a large and growing expansion of immigration detention capacity, potentially adding tens of thousands of beds. The U.S. is aiming to add at least 41,000 detention beds and possibly up to 100,000 or more through a combination of building new facilities, reopening shuttered ones, and using existing military sites. More people are in immigration detention than ever before. ICE has detained people in 59 new facilities since the second Trump administration began, including 17 federal facilities. Mass incarceration, the whole pie. Together, these systems hold nearly 2 million people in 1,566 state prisons, 98 federal prisons, and 3,116 local jails, and including 1,277 juvenile correction detention facilities. Private prisons and local jails are ramping up as ICE detention is currently funded at $3.4 billion, but lawmakers in Congress have proposed increasing that number by more than tenfold. He's talking about $30 billion to incarcerate and detain illegal immigrants. CoreCivic reports that it has informed ICE that it has approximately 30,000 more beds than it can make available. All right, and here's the last piece. President Donald Trump has made his stance clear on Washington, D.C., calling the city horribly run and promising to take over its leadership during his campaign. Trump repeatedly emphasized the need to end what he described as the city's long-standing crime and mismanagement. We're going to stop the murder and crime. It's been so badly run for so long, Trump declared during his campaign. The president's dismay with the way the district is run has brought some concerns for some D.C. residents following newly proposed legislation. On Thursday, a new bill was introduced to Congress that seeks to repeal D.C.'s Home Rule Act of 1973. That legislation currently allows the city to elect its own mayor and to handle local matters. The bill introduced by a couple of congressmen, the measure criticized D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser and the city council, accusing them of being incapable of managing the city. They dubbed the bill Bringing Oversight to Washington and Safety to Every Residents Act, or the Bowser Bill. While Mayor Bowser's office declined to comment, she addressed similar concerns in November, stating that we are not in a new place. What we have done is we followed the law and we offend ourselves. This isn't the first time the Home Rule Act has faced challenges. D.C. Shadow Representative Oyey Oluwawi noted that efforts to revoke D.C.'s self-governance have been ongoing for years. He expressed heightened concern this time with Trump in office and the GOP in control, we're far more concerned than we've ever been before. And that's been what we call the grapevine, information and news. Thank you for listening to Grapevine. Now we get to our guest this morning. Our first half of the show is called Know Your Numbers DC. And the guest is Anna Kostias, Coordinating Council Chairman, Mr. Lamont Mitchell. Lamont is chair of the Anna Kostias Coordinating Council and the COO, born and raised in the nation's capital. Mitchell has deep roots in the city and a strong commitment to its development, particularly east of the river. He's also the owner of the Imani Cafe and a strong community activist, and he's got a powerful catering business. And man, you've been all over this city. I've been knowing you for over 40 years, Lamont, and I had no idea how deeply you were involved. We went to a meeting about 9 months ago over with the Mental Health Commission, and you got up and spoke, and there were several doctors there. You outshine the doctors. This is one of, normally we have doctors here to talk about this, but now we got a guy from the community who's actively involved in educating and eradicating and getting our black men involved and getting themselves checked out, getting their lives on track. And I want to say good morning to Mr. Lamont Mitchell. Hello, Lamont.
Great. And Merry Christmas to you also. and thanks for that glowing introduction. And I'll put a little some extra in your pay for that.
Just give me a glass of Kool-Aid. I just take Kool-Aid. Glass of Kool-Aid.
Glass of Kool-Aid is fine. But you're absolutely right. I've been in this city doing a lot of work all my life. I've visited 75 countries and taken 115 international trips and have never lived anywhere else but Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And I say that with pride and some regret, because I would probably love to live somewhere else and see how the world acts differently. But I travel everywhere, and I have a couple of properties other places like Mexico. But never lived anywhere else. And Washington is my home. I love it. I attended Howard University and Cleveland Elementary School and Shaw Junior High School in Cardoza. I graduated from it, which my mom also graduated from, by the way. So I followed that long tradition of people who lived in Northwest and who continue to do things to make their city better. And you mentioned Know Your Numbers, and this is a little foundation I started, a nonprofit I started with Martha's Table and ACC to bring about awareness of men's health. It's a men's health initiative that encourages African-American men, particularly east of the river in Ward 5, where the rates are just exploding, to get checked out, to take agency for their health, to take ownership of it and become knowledgeable of it. A lot of times, we deal with the returning citizens, and when they are somehow incarcerated, they do a lot of studying and they read up on everything. Yes. And then somehow they get released, and then they forget about the studying they were doing when they were in there, and the in-depth studying that sometimes allowed them to present their own cases and to get appeals and all that kind of stuff. So that same diligence that was present in maybe incarceration should be the same way in which they take their health, because yeah. men's health matters. It matters greatly. And now more than ever before,
yes.
we begin to become a partner in our health. And this is what Know Your Numbers DC is all about. Getting men to take agency and become a partner in their health.
Man, I want to thank you for saying that, because the only people who has a constitutional right to free health care are prisoners. The Supreme Court ruled in a case called Gamble versus Estelle that prisoners have a constitutional right to health care. Most men and women that we've seen, and we know some of the same people, Lamont, these guys are coming out and they're dying within 6 months or a year, 2 years of their release. They didn't get medical care when he was in the street. They go to prison and they have a constitutional right to get it, and they don't receive it. And whatever illness they had on it was aggravated or it got worse, and they've been released. So our folks, because of what's going on now with Trump and administration, and they're cutting out the programs, they're cutting out everything, our men, the returning citizens, are further marginalized and penalized and demoralized. And that's what I like with your project is Know Your Numbers. I told a guy, I said, what's your number? He said, 136-005. I said, that ain't what I'm asking you.
Right.
You know, because when you say number to a guy been in the joint, automatically they give it 136-005.
It's like their social security number. You know your social security number, or you know your first telephone numbers by heart. I remember the first number I ever had was on 93-483-5956. And it's embedded in my mind. And remember, this number was 70 years ago, but I still remember it. But that's not the important numbers that we need right now. As we grow older, we need to know what's our A1C. We need to know what's our PSA score. We need to know what, you know, how's our heart health. And we got to take care of ourselves. And you just mentioned something so poignant, is that there is an attack on Black men's health in Washington, D.C. We are the last, we are the non-political voice. We don't have a voice. Black single men in Washington don't have a voice. We're not, the politicians are not listening to us. So who are the first ones to get cut with this new Medicaid changes? Single Black men.
Men, yes.
Who have relied on the system. A lot of returning citizens who have had Medicaid for the past 10, 15, 20 years and have never, ever worried about whether they're going to get treatment or where their medicine was going to be come from, whatever have you, are now being told we can no longer afford to take care of you. You have to go in a system where now, and here's the bad problem about it, is that these guys don't even know it. They don't even know it. They're going to wake up January 1st and go to the doctor, January 7th and go to the doctor, and they're going to say, you know what? You don't have Medicaid anymore. You got this other system that automatically enrolled you that you don't know about. But now let me just tell you about the changes. Well, you're not going to get mental health services anymore. And who needs that type of service more than somebody who has been traumatized, institutionalized, and just being a Black man living in America than that population? You're not going to have dental care anymore. So therefore, if you can't find somebody or some other organization to find you some glasses or some contact lenses or some corrective vision, you're not going to have it. You're not going to have dental work anymore. And that's crucial to good health. You got to take care of your teeth. If you don't take care of your teeth,
you can't
it's going to affect your whole body.
Yes.
And so we are being, Black men are under attack right now. And I think that not a lot of people care about it. And that's sad to say.
Let me ask you this. With what you just said, what can those men and women who came out of institutions do if they don't have any medical care, dental care, or mental health services? Where can they go? Who can they turn to?
Well, I think the system wants them to, one, sign up for Obamacare, pay a premium. It might be a small premium, it might be a larger premium, and then take the service that you get, and then try to get those other services donated through community health organizations such as Community of Hope and Whitman Walker, who are qualified federal health centers, Unity Health, that will provide some of these other additional services. But now you're telling the people, It's not a one-stop shop where you can go to your doctor and he can send you to optometrist to have your eyes checked. It's like, no, we can't check your eyes and I can't tell you where to go, but go over here and you might find that service at some nonprofit who does it for free or on a sliding scale. They might say, we'll do it, but you still got to pay something because you're working. You got some, you know, the minimum wage in D.C. is $15 an hour. So you work in minimum wage, but that's just covering your barely expense. You can't afford to pay. And I don't know if you check the prices of, if you had to buy glasses now, they're like $500, $600, $700 to buy a pair of glasses.
Yes.
And if you don't have insurance, and even when you have insurance, they take the insurance, it's $500, they get the insurance paid. They say, oh, fine, we'll take that $500, but the glasses are $700. So you got to pay another $250, even with insurance. So imagine if you don't have insurance. So we're asking people to do a lot. And we're asking the most vulnerable population, Black single men, to do even more in the district.
You know, there's some collateral consequences connected to this. When those men come out of institution, they don't have the proper identification. They don't have the Social Security card, ID card. And even when they go to get medical treatment, they are frustrated and they're stymied in trying to get the services because they don't know where to go or where to turn to get the proper identification to make them eligible to receive to apply for these benefits. So this is an ongoing problem that's getting bigger. But let me just interject this. We was with you last week, man. Oh, and you did something that just blew me away. We went to see a play that you and the Carson Coordinating Council sponsored called Furlough's Paradise. It's written by a woman who came out after on a 3-day furlough this attend a funeral. And it's ironic that I came out on furlough and met my wife 44 years ago on furlough.
Wow.
And that furlough allowed me to get a commutation and come out. And that furlough program is still on the books. And when I read the play that they allowed this girl out for 3 days to attend the funeral, the law is still on the books, Lamont. Every warden and the director of a state correctional system has the authority to extend the limits of confinement up to 30 days for educational, social, employment, et cetera. So having this right that allows you to go on furlough is still on the books, but because of the political climate, these men and women are not allowed to come out on furlough. Too oftentimes, your mother, loved ones, kids die, and you're not able to come out of prison to attend the funeral or say your last goodbyes. But this play that you had over the weekend, Furlough's Paradise, it was powerful, it was mind-blowing, and you gave us an award, man, and you had tears in my eyes, Lamont. I don't cry easy. Yes, I do.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, see, I'm getting ready to lie to you. I cry all the time.
So, Vosh, you know, that award was definitely and completely deserved. I mean, you deserve all of the awards. So, Lamont, thank you for that. And that was the Anacostia Coordinating Council. Tell us a little bit about that award. Because we want to make sure the WPFW listening audience just know how treasured Vosh Brown is.
Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you, Nikichi. And certainly, it's good to hear your voice. We go back like Cadillac seats, way back.
We go back to Yvonne Cafe.
I mean, we go back. I mean, 50 years ago, and you know, back in the late 70s when Farrakhan showed up at town. So we go back a long way. We honored Roach, and we wanted to do this. And thanks to Phil Pennell, who's the executive director of the Coordinating Council, who graciously me. As a tribute to my birthday, to buy the house out for this play and invite returning citizens and their family to be a part at no cost, and wanted to honor the people who worked in that and who had worked with returning citizens for a long, long time. And so I said, well, who will we honor? And I had a suggestion, and Phil has a suggestion, and we both came to the same person. We need to honor Roach Brown for his work. 55 years of doing this work. And I had a conversation with Roach about maybe I guess 6 months ago, we were down to Westminster Church and we had a conversation about doing some things. But I say, what great place to have this by. And here's the intersection. The intersection was a play about a furlough, about women, because women are in the system, even more so now than when Roach was in the system. But and Roach's love is acting. You know, his love is acting, yeah, and his commitment is to returning citizens. So I said, wow, this is like an apex coming together. The forces are aligning. And so we wanted to honor him as the ACC change maker for 2025 for the work that he did. Now, we also honored some other people in terms of other people who were working in the community, the ones working in organizations, particularly East of the River, the WISE, the NARC. And we also honored Reginald Robinson.
Yes.
This is dear to my heart because he's my first cousin. But he's been in this fight as well for 50 years, starting out with Ethics for Ex-Convict, with Yates down there at Main Street. And he has seen thousands of young men come to that program. A lot of them got themselves together. Some of them didn't. You didn't make it. But Frog was a straight shooter, and we honored him as well. But Roach is to do it with his love of theater and acting and his love of returning citizen. We thought it was just a match made in heaven, and we honor and we appreciate him and his lovely wife, who's always with him.
You know what?
And if the girls got any attention on Roach, they better get out of here. She's always with him. When I say always, always.
Always.
Yeah, especially since Martine is a fashionista now. She's gracing the covers of all these magazines. Roach, you better watch out.
That's right. She's making this, checking it twice. So they're a wonderful couple. We appreciate them. We love them for what they do. But we thought it's just time for people like Roach, who started, and Nakisha, you know this, who designed the mayor's office of returning citizens.
Yes.
Designed that office and then worked the office with no staff.
Yeah.
You followed me for a long time. And so we just appreciate him for what he has done and what he means to this city. And ACC, this is something small that we could do for a man who has done so much for so many.
I want to thank you all for that, man, and especially Phil Pinnell for working with you in the Anticonstitutional Coordinating Committee, man. And I just want to throw something in about my man, Frog, Reggie Robinson. We should do a special celebration for Reggie, because for 50 years, he worked with EFEC. Petey Green helped create EFEC.
Yeah.
Efforts for Ex-Convicts. Just to let people know the acronym.
EFEC stands for Efforts for Ex-Convicts. And it was the first halfway house program in the country, ran, operated, and owned by returning citizens. And his staff was all returning citizens.
Yes.
And not only that, now you said Frog was a straight shooter. He would send you back if you didn't do what you're supposed to do. He didn't care about you grew up with you. You got to do what you have to do. And Frog didn't take no jiggy boogie from nobody. You know. And I want to make sure that Frog is getting his props and getting his flowers while he can. And thank you, Phil Pinnell, and the whole Anticosti Neighborhood Committee Council. Man, it was a beautiful evening. Yes. And when I saw that young lady in the play, that she was on a 3-day furlough, I looked at my wife. I met her while I was on furlough. I was on furlough from a life sentence and met her. So that furlough program, there's people listening to the show right now. Every warden in every correctional system has the authority to extend the limits of confinement up to 30 days. They can let you out on furlough for 30. You remember the famous case back in the day of Willie Horton up in Massachusetts. He brought some negative energy to that particular program, but yet that law is still on the books. And we need to use these laws to get our people out of there, because they got a lot of folks who are dying, Phil, Lamont, who are dying inside of prison with terminal illness. I just got a call a couple of days ago from a young man who got less than 6 months to live, and they won't let him out. So go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that's so critical, because we know that one of the health modalities to people is their freedom and their movement. So if you're dealing with some morbidities, high blood pressure and diabetes and heart disease and all that kind of stuff, it is important when you constrict a person's movement and exercise and all that kind of stuff, it does not aid for their rehabilitation and health reasons. So it is just that we really got to take a look at how the system treating people with these morbidities and illnesses. Because if you don't, even though you might be taking the medicine, even though they might be giving you the medicine spottingly if it comes in and all that kind of stuff, it affects your chances for rehabilitation and recovery. And that's not good for people who are incarcerated.
We have a couple of minutes left. You want to give our listeners, Lamont, some closing words, what they can do to take care of their health, how they can contact you and the Anacostia Coordinating Council. What can be done to assist these men and women who are going through these medical challenges right now?
Well, yes. Thank you, Roach, and thanks for having me. And I would just say to the African-American community, to Black men in particularly east of the river, and Roach, this is a staggering statistics. If the people, the life expectancy in Anacostia or east of the river, Ward 7 and 8 and part of 5, is 12, 15 years shorter than somebody living in Ward 4 wow. or 3. That means they live to 84, we live to 67, 68. And let me give you the sad analogy, the fact about this. It doesn't make a difference whether you were born east of the river or moved to east of the river. The number stays the same. Diabetes is so out of control east of the river that if east of the river was a country with 160,000 people, we would be the fifth largest population per capita with diabetes in the world.
Wow. Wow.
So this thing is real. And I tell men, and my challenge is to get tested, know your numbers, and become a partner in your health, because you can't be a good father if you are a sick father.
Right. There you go. That's heavy. Yeah.
Yes. You're right. Wow.
We want to appreciate you, Lamont. You want to give some contact information, how folk can reach you at the
sure. You can reach me at knowyournumbersdc.com. You can reach me there. All my information is public. If you're looking for somebody to come and speak to your group about men's health, because it's so important that the church groups, fraternities, and other groups talk about these issues. One of the things with Black men's health that we don't like to talk about these issues. And some of these issues are very, very personal and private, and they need to be talked about in small groups, like an AA group for men.
Yeah.
Because health issues are just that important. And they're not going to talk about it in groups of people. You're not going to get a church meeting to talk about these issues. But we as Black men have to come together and support one another and talk about these issues and encourage one another. Because what you've gone through, other men have gone through. And they can share that opportunity with you to be able to support you. We got to be able to talk more, and we got to take a control of our health.
Thank you. Our guest this morning on the show has been none other than the fantastic, renowned community activist, Lamont Mitchell, Anacostia Coordinating Council. And the guy, the same way he comes across with that passion and commitment, you see the same thing when you talk to him. Some people you can look at and you can feel that they're real. And some people you can talk to, you say, that's full of jiggy boogie. I don't want to mess with this turkey here. But Lamont is one of them guys that you need to know, you need to talk to, and he's doing whatever he's doing to help make things better for a lot of us who are less fortunate. So my hat's off to you, Lamont. And again, thank you for the award and everything that you and Phil Pinnell and my man Frog. And again, I'm going to leave this with you. Please get something together for Frog, man, because Frog has been going through some stuff. A lot of guys were mad with him because of what he did. He did his job. He did it right. And he was the only halfway house ran by ex-offenders in the country that he ran it for 25 or 30 years along with Rudy Yates. And, man, we miss you, Frog. Please, Lamont, do something for my man, Reggie Frog Robinson.
We will do just that. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for joining us. That, I guess, has been Lamont Mitchell, Chairman and CEO of Anacostia Coordinating Council. And we'll see you again. And thanks a lot, Lamont. And tell old Phil Pinnell, give me one of them buttons, because everybody has to keep all them damn buttons.
Well, you know what? let me just say this. That was my mistake. I was going to bring the button to you on Saturday, but I will get it to you. He let it go. He said, in a peace offering for Roach, he let his one of his favorite buttons go, and I will promise you I'll get that button to you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay, this is WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. If you want to speak and know anything more about Lamont Mitchell or our upcoming guests, the number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893.
And now we'll go to our next guest. Our subject matter is Virginia's civil commitment law / indefinite incarceration. And our guest is Dr. Bernita Thompson, a retired founder of two schools in Washington, D.C., Roots Activity Learning Center and Roots Public Charter School. She is the author of numerous educational articles and the African Center in Interdisciplinary Multi-Level Hands-on Science Curriculum. Dr. Thompson is here to share the simple commitment story and ask the community to sign the petition to free her son from Virginia's civil commitment program. And joining her is also a good friend of ours, a civil rights attorney named Phil Fornici. I always have trouble pronouncing your name, Phil. Phil Fornici. And I've been knowing Phil for 30, 40 years. And he's one of the few attorneys that I've been calling every time I got arrested or rearrested. I will call this guy, Phil Fornici. He never said no. He took my calls. This is going on for 30, 40 years. And this guy's been on the front line. So Phil is joining us this morning with Dr. Bernita Thompson. Are you there, Dr. Thompson?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for having me. And you have the best program ever to show people what the wrongs are in this society and how we can make them right. Thank you so much for being there for us.
Well, Dr. Bernita, before you go on, I really want to be part of this conversation. I'm driving. So but I just want to say hats off to Dr. Bernita Thompson. She's been in this struggle for a long time. Phil Fornici, how you doing? So I just want to say I'm listening, but I'm driving.
Thank you.
You know, this is an unusual show. We bring people on that we've been knowing 30, 40, 50 years. This ain't somebody that just came on the front line. These folks have been doing it, doing the people's work for years. And Phil and Dr. Thompson, I want to thank you. And Dr. Thompson, you're here this morning to talk about your son. We had you on the show 8 years ago, you and Ms. Boffman. And folks are not familiar with this civil commitment law. Phil, you want to give us a little background on what the Virginia civil commitment law is?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Roach and Martine. So in Virginia, if you're convicted of certain what they'll call sex-related offenses, which is a very, very big net, you can be eligible for what they call civil commitment, which means after you've finished your time, when you've served your sentence, they can have yet another trial. And it's what they call a civil trial, not another criminal trial, and decide whether you, what they'll claim is that you can't be rehabilitated. If you have a... There's a jury system.
Go ahead, Phil. Go ahead.
If that jury finds that you are various factors, they can decide that you are a dangerous sexual offender and hold you for the rest of your life.
And that's the subject of the topic today. Dr. Thompson was here 8 years ago, her and Miss Boffman, and their two sons were being civilly committed because of a sexual offense. They served their time, and a lot of folks are not aware of this, but based on this Virginia civil commitment law, you can serve your time and they can re-arrest you, re-incarcerate you for the rest of your life. Indefinitely, because somebody think that you might do something. Here's a law that they think that you got a crystal ball. They can predict who's going to commit a crime in the future because I think you might commit a crime. You are not allowed or entitled to be free, even though your time is up. This doesn't make sense. And a lot of folks are not aware of this. Most states have these civil commitments law. In fact, we just heard it recently from President Trump. He's talking about civilly committing some of the homeless people who's been removed from all of the homeless sites across the city. So this law of civil commitment is coming back. And Dr. Bernita Thompson, she's been fighting tooth and nail with a baseball bat, with a toothpick, anything she can to get her son out. Dr. Thompson, you want to explain, you want to share what it is that you were doing now with your organization about trying to get your son out after he's been in how long?
since 2008. He was supposed to be released in 2008. And there's no other offense that he has committed since 1999. Wow. However, once they civilly commit you, they give you rules and regulations and all kind of things that you have to do. And then they'll give you, they'll let you out for conditional release. But the conditions are so stringent that a normal human being, you know, can't follow all of those particular stringent conditions forever and ever.
What are some of the conditions? I know you mentioned something about he couldn't have a woman visit him at home.
Right. They put him under, we'll let you out. You can be at this house, but you're under house arrest, which means you can't deal with any other people. You know, you're under house arrest. And when a normal probation, when you get normal probation, just a normal person, the point of letting them out is to help them to readjust to society. Yeah. How are you going to readjust to society if you're under house arrest? Then the second one is you can't have any females at your house. Now, you're a normal adult male. You normally want to have relationships with females. And so, therefore, you're under house arrest, so you can't meet anybody, and you can't invite any females to your house. And it's just a lot of things that are rules and regulations. They're not criminal acts. I could see it if they said, you know, we'll bring you, you're there. And you better not rob a store. You better not, you know, do something. Right. You know, I could see that, but it's never something criminal. It's always
some civil.
Any little thing that they feel like, oh, well, you disobeyed this rule, so you go back. And then when they pull you back, they keep you in jail for about 8 months before they even go to a hearing.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just ridiculous. And there are about 20 states that have this civil commitment, Virginia being one of them and one of the worst ones. Well, they're one of the worst ones, yeah. And so it's called indefinite
incarceration.
Incarceration.
Indefinite. But it can hold you for indefinite.
Psychology Today says that it's hypocrisy in sexual violent predator expert testimony. The testimonies that they give are prejudiced, and that the things that these people that are civilly commitment did are crimes, but they're not mental disorders and must be distinguished from them. And civil commitment is saying you have a mental disorder. That's why you committed the crime, and we have to protect you from society. And that's not true. No real psychologist agrees with that.
Wow.
Let me ask you.
Numerous articles. Another article about law misused to create multi-million dollar industry, and that the small group of psychologists are preying upon the public sphere of some kind of sex offender. But the burden is on the taxpayers of Virginia, and they need to understand that they're financing an industry, a multi-million dollar industry, that is misusing the law.
Let me ask you this. Your son served his time for his first crime, and he's been locked up 17 years without a charge or crime or release date. Is that
correct? Exactly.
And Phil, as an attorney, is this, you're a criminal defense attorney, you've been doing this for legal work for years. How is it possible that you can be locked up because somebody think or can guess or assume that you might go out and rob, might go out and do a similar act in the past? What kind of law is this that can assume that you're going to be guilty 5 years from now and keep you in prison before you even get out, just to keep you, prevent you from doing something that nobody can predict will happen? So how can you be punished for something that you didn't do that they think that you might do?
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. It goes between terrible and stupid. You know, they don't do this if you're convicted for murder. You know, you're not trying it for the rest of your life. You could serve your 15 years, whatever it is, but you're not put on a list. What happens here is that they just keep punishing you. So they may let you out at some point, but then when you get out, as Bernita was describing, you're stuck in this crazy spider web. You know, all these rules and restrictions that no human being can survive. And what it really does is it destroys the person, it destroys their family, and their hope, any hope they might have had for the future. It's simply outrageous, and almost half the states have such laws.
Dr. Thompson, how's your son's mental state? I mean, because I've been in prison, and I know what it's like to have time, but I had a release date. But to be held without a release date, they can keep you as long as they want and penalize you for frivolous, insignificant, stupid acts and not criminal, and they can punish you over and over and over again. How's your son's mental state right now?
Well, he is in a good mental state because he's a Christian. And our church, Union Temple Baptist Church.
You go to Union Temple?
Yeah, he was baptized and grew up in Union Temple. Yes, he did.
We've been going there for the last 35 years. Ain't that something?
Yes. So every Sunday on Sunday school, we pray for him. I keep in touch with him. He calls me every Sunday. I let him know that the church is still praying for him and that everybody has signed the petition for him. And that's the thing. I went on change.org and did a petition. And if I can get 1,000 signatures, I was told that I could send it to the governor and could possibly get him out through that. And okay. So I'm coming on today to ask everyone to please sign the petition, go on change.org. And there's a petition that says, free Mawando Amerson from indefinite civil commitment.
Spell his name so our listeners can have the correct spelling.
Mwando.
Mawando.
Free Mawando.
Amerson. Amerson.
Okay. Does your son have any kids?
Yes. And see, that's another thing. He was arrested when she was 5 years old. She's now 32 years old.
Wow. Wow.
He missed all of her coming up. He missed her high school graduation. Mm-hmm. He missed her college graduation. She is now a sergeant in the U.S. Army over in Germany. He missed her getting her sergeant award. You know, he missed her whole life, and he missed his whole adult life. And it's really, really not fair because, the American Medical Journal of Ethics says that post-prison confinement like this is poorly conceived. It's a poorly conceived scheme, shaky documental grounds, and that they're trying to co-opt medical authority and and put it with legal commitments. And it's totally offensive, and it's totally not true that this kind of thing should be done.
Ooh. Can I jump in here for a moment? Yes. This is Nikichi. Well, first of all, Dr. Bernita, how old is Mwando right now?
He is 49 years old.
And you know why I'm asking that? Because I was at his baby naming ceremony. So, I mean, I'm just saying, this is someone who is not a criminal. I mean, right. I'm just saying, you know, the family, you know, his sister is an acclaimed physician. I mean, his mother, Dr. Bernita Thompson, an acclaimed educator. And I know you have been so diligent going back and forth to Virginia. And that's something else. He's incarcerated in Virginia, not allowed to come to D.C. Mm-hmm. where he grew up, where his family is. But you have been on the you've been on the court since day one, and you are to be commended for what you have done, what you've been trying to do with respect to your son.
Well, I thank you, Nkechi, because you are a bomb in my life. I love you. You were the babysitter. You were a teenager and a babysitter when I first opened the school, and you took care of both of my kids. And then when Mwando was hurt like this and put in this civil commitment, you have gone back and forth also with me to court and stayed overnight in Virginia and fought with me. You have always been right by my side. I love you. I appreciate you. And I appreciate all the books that you have written that our Roots kids read. And I appreciate all of the work that you do as an attorney to help everybody understand righteousness and what is wrong and what is right in this society and how we can change it and how we can get reparations. Thank you. And
yes,
but thank you. And everybody sign that petition,
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, this is amazing here. I don't know how you and your son had put up with this, Dr. Thompson. I know you've been to Congress. You've talked to all kinds of people in high places. Have you got any support from anybody to undo this calamity that's happening to you and your family? Do you have anybody that you've talked to who can make something happen on board? Because like Nikichi says, even though you may have, we need to sign this petition to get everybody to go to change.org and do whatever you can to help out. Who is in your corner right now, Dr. Thompson, that you can count on that's really pushing the fight to bring your son home?
Well, there's nobody that has the power that is on my side fighting. Anybody who has power in legislation, they're scared to touch it because they're scared that they won't be elected again or, you know, Trump will jump on them or, you know, all of these legislators I have gone to and I've given them all the information. They got it. They got it. All they have to do is stand up and put their big drawers on.
I'm glad you said it. I didn't.
No,
yes, indeed. Yeah, civil commitment is a form of double jeopardy. And no other offense, just like Phil said, no other offense, including murder, requires a second trial once a criminal trial is completed and their sentence is completed. A civil commitment is a punishment for a crime that may or may not even ever occur.
Ooh.
There's no tool or person that can predict future crimes. The American Psychiatric Association does not even recognize the practice of civil commitment as valid or necessary.
I feel, what do you have to say to this? You're an attorney, and Dr. Thompson just said this is unusual that they can go ahead and lock you up and incarcerate you for a crime that hasn't happened, who they think may happen. What can people do who's listening to this show, Phil Fornishing?
Yes.
Well, I think one thing is to really understand what's happening, because this is so hidden. It's, you know, some refer to it as a shadow prison system.
When wow.
The civil commitment process itself is not due process. It's not a real trial. It's not like you get the kinds of limited protections you get in a criminal case. It's much worse. So they could, it's kind of a kangaroo court that they do after you've already been out. So it's quite outrageous, and it's hidden. You know, they put you in one facility. In Virginia, there's one facility where they hold you. It's a prison. They deny it's a prison. They claim that it's treatment. You know, a dog over the head is treatment, I guess. But yeah. It's not right, and it's not fair. But I think the biggest thing is for people to understand this is going on in half the country, and that people are being held without due process, without a real opportunity to contest this happens. You don't even get, for instance, you know, a way out, you know, a way that you can see the end of the tunnel. So the only way that these guys can get out is from the outside. That is pressure from the outside, from people understanding what a horrible, horrible travesty this is, and that no one should be held for not committing a crime.
So once we get 1,000 signatures, then what is next? What should we do next?
Once we get 1,000 signatures, it's a big possibility, because it has happened before, that they would overturn his civil commitment and let him come back home to D.C.
Thank you. We've got about a minute to go. I want to thank Dr. Bernita Thompson, the founder of two schools, Roots Activity Learning Center and Roots Public Charter School. We are with you. We support you. Anything that we can do here from to help you, please sign the petition to help get Mawando home. Folks, it's 400 people in Virginia's system being held on civil commitment, 400, whose time is up. They've been still being overly punished. We talk about double jeopardy. This is double punishment without a reasoning. And I, of course, I know it's a lot of racism involved in this same situation. So please, we need to support our own. And when President Trump just said he's going to civilly commit some of the homeless from these homeless sites they're removing, this is on, you're getting the tip of the iceberg right here, people. This thing is going to happen all across the country. So if we don't stand up and support and help Dr. Bernita Thompson, you may look up and you'll be on our show talking about what can we do to help get your son or loved one out on a civil commitment. You want to give us some closing words, Dr. Bernita Thompson, before we go?
Okay. I want to say thank you to the audience, and thank you to you and your wife for allowing me to be on and to be able to tell the world about what is going on. Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you, lady. And anything that we can do to help, go ahead, Phil, you want to give a closing comment before we leave?
No, I just want to thank you, Roach. You've really been on this issue for a long time, and really appreciate your support and what you're doing. It's a terrible thing. It's an outright evil process that's going on.
We want everybody, get your pen out. Go to change.org. Free Mawando Emerson. MWANDOAMERSON. We can do that. We can do that in a day. We need 1,000 signatures. Add it up. Let's go for it. We got to do it. The people have the power. I say it all the time. We got the power.
And if you lose the information, you can call the station and ask for Roach or Mertine, and we'll be gladly to connect you with Dr. Bernita Thompson.
Yes.
Please, folks, we got to stand up and help our own. And this is one of our own. She's been given her whole life for this. And he's been in over 17 years without a charge, because they think he might do something in the future.
And what she has done with our students, I mean, I have family members who attended Roots Public Charter School. You people in D.C. know what she's done with Roots Activity Learning Center. The schools, we need your support now for Dr. Bonita Thompson.
Thank you for joining us. And if you got any questions, call the station, ask for Martina and I, and we'll connect you with Dr. Thompson. And lady, we're in your corner. You got our support in anything. As you know, you were here 8 years ago, and I hope we'll be here 8 days from now saying that your son is released.
Yes.
So we're going to do whatever we can to help out. And thank you. Thank you. And believe this, that we got to stand up for each other. Because when that old thing said that they came from a neighbor, and I didn't do nothing. They came in the morning for my next neighbor. I didn't do nothing. And tomorrow, they're coming for you. If you want somebody to do something, take a stand and help somebody who's been helping us. Thank you both, Phil Fournier and yes. Dr. Bonita Thompson. And, of course, Nikichi Typhon. Thank you all for joining in on Crossroads. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mother, there's too many of you to cry. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you die. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, father, don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today. Picket lines and picket signs, punish me, sister, with brutality, sister. Talk to me, sister, so you can see, sister. Oh, what's going on? Everybody thinks we're at home. Oh, but who are they to judge us simply cause our hair is long? There's brutality. Come on, talk to me, so you can see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on. Ooh.
Right on. Right on. Right on.
Thursday, November 28th, WPFW honors the National Day of Mourning, commemorates the birthday of Jimi Hendrix, and offers music centering gratitude from 9 a.m. until 7 p.m. Bushmeat opens the day with a birthday tribute to Jimi Hendrix. At noon, WPFW takes you once again live to the annual United American Indians of New England rally in Plymouth Rock, Massachusetts. Finally, James Funk offers music filled with gratitude from 3 until 7 p.m. That's all here on WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover, and you are tuned into WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.